This is XTP Media.
As well as making everything look ultra pretty.
Right.
Somebody's doing a Tomcat by the end of the year, yeah. It's those pillows, isn't it?
Yeah, you might need to use the mattress topper as well.
Well, it depends if you ask anybody in France that. Okay, that was to me. Well, funny you should say. I mean,
I don't know what to press. I don't know what to do. Okay, all right, let's give it a go then. 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Ready for takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 78 of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Today, all three of us are in the studio. Well, various bits of studio. Today, I'm joined first by Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society. And Tim, of course, is the editor-in-chief of Aerospace Magazine. Tim, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Peter. Good to be here. And a happy new year 2018 to everybody.
Yep, we're a bit late. And better late than never, of course, is Gareth Stringer, editor. Executive editor, excuse me, Gareth, at Global Aviation Resource. Gareth, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
You've not been too well, have you?
No, I've been ill for like all of 2018 so far, ridiculously. But on the night that we are recording, this time tomorrow, I shall be back at work on a night shift. So, my 2018 starts tomorrow.
Oh, bless you. Well, just for the record, we're recording on the 25th of January. We're a few weeks late for our January episode, and we don't have a main subject today. We're just going to catch up and talk aviation and aerospace. So it's great to have us all back around the microphone.
Too true.
So let's start off first going back to last year. We finished off 2017 with, of course, Santiago Rivas talking about the Falklands and the Argentine angle, and we had some fantastic feedback from everybody for that. We're very grateful for everybody who made the effort to send us some feedback. A few comments though. Andy Kitney, apologies Andy, fascinating, informative, interesting, balanced Falklands part 4. Thanks for yet another great show. So thank you, Andy, very much for that. And Gary Fairley over on Facebook, I think this one, what a fitting end to a great series of shows. I think victory in 1982 has given Britain a view of Argentine forces as being hapless, feckless amateurs. Due respect has been given to their professionalism and bravery in most difficult circumstances. He also goes on to say, I note the issue of bomb fusing came up again, and both Jerry Pook's account and that of the OC of 1st Squadron in Harrier Boys also highlight the difficulties faced by attack pilots. Both British and Argentine pilots faced the same problems as they instinctively flew lower to avoid detection. And it was almost reassuring to hear that the Argentina had the same inter-service squabbles that we did. So thanks very much for that, Gary. Yeah, Santiago was very open, very honest, very balanced, and we were absolutely delighted to have him on. And I thought that really wrapped the series up.
Peter, can I just say, I just want to say on behalf of everybody else as well, to you and Tim, a huge, huge well done for putting all that series together. For one reason or another, I wasn't able to pod very much in the sort of second half of last year. And what you did, getting all those people together and putting that series together, was remarkable. And the feedback that we've had is well deserved. So well done, chaps.
Definitely, yeah. Well
yeah,
done.
Appreciate it. We had some great support. People like Lewis Gaylard, amongst others, helped us to get some of those guests in. Dave Gledhill was also very supportive of helping us, particularly to connect with Santiago. So a very big thank you to them as well. And, of course, the guests as well. Because going into this, we weren't quite sure, and they weren't quite sure, how this would all fall out. But I think the honesty of everybody, and of course, you know, most people look at some of the comments that Sharky Ward made as being quite contentious, but I think everyone approached it in a very open and honest way, and that feedback from Gary Fairley I think sums it all up, that it was very balanced. We tried really hard not to bring our own prejudices to the show. And I think what's clear is that everyone who participated enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was very successful. I think we got about something like 75 to probably just under 100,000 downloads of the four episodes. So
wow.
Quite amazing. And bizarrely as well, we had another episode in there that I've said before was one that I did more for my own pleasure, and that was the episode about the fairy barracuda, and that bizarrely also proved to be massively successful, particularly on social media. So thank you to everybody out there for all the support that we had for those episodes. So let's move on to 2018 then. Lots going on. Tim, we haven't talked since you were in Dubai, actually. But a few things came out of Dubai. Of course, you got to speak to another astronaut. There was lots of news flying around.
Yeah, I mean, all right. So looking back now, a couple of months to the Dubai Air Show in November. I mean, people going into that, the general consensus, I think, was it was going to be a quiet show. Airlines were not going to be in the mood for ordering much. And what a surprise! The first surprise was pulled on the first day when Airbus people. The big rumor there was an order for A380s with Emirates, and lo and behold, someone came in to a press conference with a Boeing model.
And, were you in that press conference, by the way?
I wasn't, no, but I heard the people who were there who said that they. So, you know, it's quite surprising. And Emirates signed up for 40 Dreamliners. So that was kind of the shock on the first day. Took Airbus a little bit of time to kind of get into their swing. You know, usually they bang, 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 they've got the deals out, and they pummel Boeing to death in the sales race. You know, everyone loves this, the air shows, sales race. Everyone likes the scores on the doors by the end of the week. Dubai was no different. But this time it was Boeing that was doing it and doing that kind of pressure. Got to Wednesday, and quite a few people, actually, journos, had actually decided that it was going to be a quiet week and had gone home. This is when Airbus pulled out like the huge 430 aircraft, like a bulk order. That's 49.5 billion for A320s. And this is shared around a few airlines. It's kind of collated by a kind of a venture
yeah,
investment.
Yeah, that's right.
Firm.
A lot of low cost carriers in there, isn't there?
Yeah. So Indigo Partners is the kind of group, and they did a bulk buy, so they must have got like a huge discount. Boeing then went out and announced a 225 order for Maxes, 737 Maxes with Fly Dubai. That was their biggest single aisle order in the Middle East to date. So you know, people who'd gone there and thought, oh, well, you know, this is going to be a quiet one. We were quietly shocked. Other interesting news there, Chinese were out there in force. It was a great opportunity to see the Chinese 1st of August display team flying their J-10s. Very impressive. They had their UAVs out in force, and they're a very interesting jet UCAV that kind of broke cover as a mock-up, as well as the Boom people who talked a little bit about their return to supersonic flight and what they were doing with the sort of engine choices next year. So yeah, pretty good, pretty interesting in show. And yeah, Al Warden was there.
Yeah.
Obviously, Apollo astronaut, and he was there to from Apollo 15. He was there to kind of support, you know, U.S. sales in the region, but also to help encourage STEM subjects in the UAE, United Arab Emirates, after conquering air transport with Emirates and Etihad and what have you, becoming a global super hub in airport terms. The next thing the UAE want to do is conquer the stars. So they've got like a Mars mission going on, a Mars probe. They're now recruiting for an astronaut corps, and they've even got like a very ambitious sci-fi plan for a city on Mars in, I think, in about sort of 100 years. So this is the next thing that they're pushing for. And you know, if anyone who's studied the history of Emirates Airline, you know,
yeah,
don't rule them out. When they set their minds on something, then it happens. One last thing there from Dubai, which was kind of missing in action, really, was the flying car or, you know, aerial taxi, urban VTOL stuff that we've been hearing a lot about. You know, every week now there's a new flying car launched, breaks cover, CGI released. And Dubai was pushing hard to be one of the trailblazers in this. For some reason, neither Volocopter nor the Chinese EHang were there, not even as a sort of like a stand or on static, which is a little bit surprising. You know, sort of rumors behind the scenes and thinking about it, maybe reading between the lines, is maybe the certification is a little bit more tricky than people you know, kind of first thought.
Right.
Anyway,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. And Tim, the week after Dubai, given all of that news, we ran a poll on Twitter, and we said, in 10 years' time, which air or trade aerospace show will be the world's premier aerospace event? We included links to Farnborough, Dubai and Paris air shows. So we sort of had the opportunity to get a feel from everyone. We had about 170 responses over the few days we ran it, and interestingly enough, Farnborough still came out as the top aerospace air show, and I was quite surprised. Farnborough with 62% and Dubai and Paris with 14% each, and 10% for other trade shows. I'm not quite sure what's in there, but Farnborough is still seen as the premier show.
Well, it depends if you ask anybody in France that.
Well, that's why I tried to include.
So I don't know whether that would be our Anglosphere listeners, perhaps.
Possibly, but we've got. Yeah,
if we did the Pong podcast in French, we would be getting a different answer.
Well, I tell you what, anybody who's listening to this, who wants to give us any feedback, do chip in and do that. And what we'll do is we'll run that Al Warden interview now.
Well, I'm here for two reasons. I work with Coleman to kind of help host the U.S. Partnership Pavilion at the Dubai Air Show. But I came in early so that I could spend a few days talking to local schools about science, technology, engineering, math, and trying to help promote STEM to the students, because they're the future of our species.
And you went to the moon in 1971. Why haven't we been back?
There are several reasons we haven't been back. One is that we put our money into the shuttle program, which can't go to the moon. The other is there's probably no good reason to go back to the moon until we get ready to get serious about going to Mars. And then we might want to put a crew on the moon for 6 months to make sure we know how to live in a harsh environment. That might be a worthwhile thing to do. I don't know.
The And is the US now on the right track in terms of kind of commercial partnerships, sort of SpaceX, Blue Origin?
Well, I think commercial space has a place in the modern world, very much like the original development of airplanes, which started out with mail delivery and ended up with commercial airplanes. I suspect that the space will kind of go the same way, and the day will come when ordinary people can go to space and for a vacation and go into a Hilton that's in orbit around the world and watch the world. I see that as a long-term future. Going to other planets like Mars, I don't see commercial doing that.
Okay. And what do you think of the UEA's space plans here? Mission to Mars City, astronaut training?
Well, I think they have a chief here who's very visionary. He realizes that to pull a program together, you have to have a goal. And so he's established that goal to put the Hope satellite around Mars in 2020 and develop a Mars city by 100 years. I think it's the kind of vision and the kind of push we need to get everybody going in the same direction. And I think the UAE is a perfect place to do that because the UAE is between the east and the west, and they can pull from both sides. And I think it's a wonderful thing.
And how important is this for human spaceflight to kind of inspire people? Because some scientists would argue the robots we have today, Curiosity on Mars, they can do far more than an astronaut can and at lower risk.
There's a role for both robots and humans in space. You can send a robot first to check it out, but I think you eventually have to send humans. See, in my opinion, the whole purpose of the space program is to get us in a position where when we can't live on Earth anymore, we go somewhere else. Robots don't do us any good for that. We got to send people. So I think the long term is people. We got to get people in space. I think in the meantime, it's quite efficient to send a robot to check out a new planet before we send people. But I think we've got to send people because that's the whole idea and the purpose of the space program is to give us the capability to go somewhere else.
Okay. And finally, Colonel Wooden, what's your most fond memory of the Apollo years?
Getting rid of two guys after being cooped up with them for 4.5 days is probably my best memory of the whole flight.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
From across the globe, from the center of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Our warden, quite impressive. What was he like?
He was great fun. Yeah, I mean, he was obviously very busy. Loads of people kind of pressing him for sort of selfies and can you sign this, can you sign that? He was rushed off his feet, but great guy. Twinkle in his eye, said, you know, what was the best thing about Apollo 15? And he went, getting out of the capsule at the end of the thing, because those two guys stank.
Yeah. It's reality.
Really good guy.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's stick with space then. I know we're jumping all over the place at the moment, but I've never been more excited, Gareth, than I have coming into this year for the number of launches, the various opportunities to see different launch vehicles. You know, we've got the Falcon Heavy that I think yesterday did its static test.
Yeah, quite impressive, even though it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and you know, at the beginning of last year, we were, you know, SpaceX hadn't even returned one of its first stages back to terra firma, as it were. What an amazing year 2017 was, and what about 2018? So much to come.
it's actually getting quite, I find it, I don't know about you guys, find it quite difficult to keep up now, because there just seems to be so much happening. We seem to be in a real period now of not just of innovation and people talking about ideas, and but things actually happening, and that to me is incredibly exciting, and you can't help but maybe get a little bit ahead and wonder, you know, where we're going to be in 5 years, 10 years time. But I think there's going to be a lot for us to talk about this year. And if there's one thing I just did want to mention, just linking in Tim's interview with Al, is that we should give John Young a mention, who passed away on the 5th of January this year. John, he was the ninth person to walk on the moon and was an absolute centerpiece of NASA and the space project for an incredibly long time. An incredible man who achieved a massive amount. So we should be doffing our cap to John Young as well, I think.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Definitely.
Yeah, hear, hear. And of course, anyone who hasn't read Roland White's book, Into the Black, go read that book. It's I noticed I've been doing the rounds again after we heard that sad news. And Roland, of course, has a great deal to say about John Young. So hear. On a positive note, we saw Rocket Lab, of course, down in New Zealand with the Electron launch vehicle. That's fantastic news. I sort of am just wondering, how have New Zealand managed to launch to space, but we don't seem to be able to do it here in the UK? What, we've had so much talk about launch pads and investing in aerospace, but we don't seem to be making any progress, Tim.
Okay, that was to me. Well, funny you should say. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's one of the things where, you know, so New Zealand. Sorry, apologies to New Zealanders who are listening. So maybe because they're kind of so far away that kind of people kind of forget about them, and then you're browsing through Twitter one day or something, and you go, well, hang on, they've got a spaceport down there, and oh, hang on, there's this huge World War One collection of airplanes built by Sir Peter Jackson, you know, and you know, I suppose no one's telling them not to do it, are they? You know,
yeah.
It's interesting about Rocket Lab. You know, Rocket Lab, amazing stuff, and a, you know, revolutionizing, really, sort of, you know, sort of low cost launch and I think it's the first privately built space pad, you know, without any government.
Yeah.
Interestingly, last year in November, I think this is after Dubai, the RES, there was a company that surfaced was speaking, who is called Orbex, and they're a UK company, and they've been testing a rocket engine somewhere.
Oh, I didn't know about
that. The past year, they've been keeping very, very quiet. A lot of very innovative stuff going in there. Composites, 3D printed, and they're looking to, you know, and then they've even got the first sort of customer signed up, and they're looking to kind of launch probably from Scotland. They've been keeping very well under the radar, but it's kind of, wow, what, you know, surely someone in the UK must have complained about, like, about the noise about a rocket being tested next door. but, you know, they're very, very, been keeping very quiet, didn't want any publicity, and they wanted to just sort of, you know, slowly do, well, not slowly, they're a startup, so they're moving quite fast, but they didn't want to kind of overpromise and not deliver and get all this technology sorted out. So they've got a really, really it's a small, so, you know, like Rocket Lab, small launcher, but really, really, you know, good thrust to weight, good efficiency, and promising cheap, you know, cheap access to space. So the rest of the conference was interesting, because it was looking at you know, small sat, the explosion in just how many small sats people are looking at these days, and what happens if the price comes down. You got constellations, you now got people who can put a SAR radar in a satellite size of a briefcase. I mean, that's just mad, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And on the Rocket Lab launch, I was reading yesterday about this Humanity Star. I didn't know anything about it. What a fantastic idea! Did you read about that? He's
it's like a reflective.
disco ball. Yeah, it's like a disco ball. And he's launched it into low Earth orbit. And I think it's going to be there for about 9 months before the orbit degrades and it will turn to Earth. But because it's like a disco ball, it reflects the sun. So you can see it from almost anywhere in the world. And as it rotates on its orbit, if you go onto their website, it will tell you when it is next over your way, and you'll be able to look up and see it without telescopes, binoculars, or anything. You could just see it with your eyes. So what a fantastic thing.
So, wow. So here's a question. Talking of unusual payloads, here's a question for the extended team and perhaps our wider listeners. I'm sorry to hijack your presenter role, Peter, but... No? Unusual payloads, Falcon Heavy, and a red Tesla roaster. Now, there's been a bit of controversy about that. You've got to put something on there as a mass object. Is it a stunt? Is it a waste of time? Or is it just Elon having fun? What do we reckon?
He's not stupid, is he?
No.
You know, I mean, it probably ticks every... Does it tick every box from everyone's point of view, if you know what I mean, a PR point of view, and exactly. I thought you were going to ask us where that satellite had gone.
Well, I mean, the satellite is the car. I don't know. I mean, it's on the one hand, you
the
can
Zoomer.
Say, well, this is a this is a somebody could be here could be having a free ride to space, couldn't they? But on the other hand, if you were putting, you know, how much can the thing throw into low Earth orbit? 62 tons, something similar. If you were to put in 62 tons of satellite on the top of that thing, I mean, a Tesla thing is not going to be 62 tons, but a sports car. But if you were putting that and putting all your effort into it, and then, you know, Elon Musk says, well, you know, there's a 50-50 chance it might blow up on launch anyway, but that's a lot of sort of science down the drain, isn't it? So
yeah. It is, but... Could they have not, you know, it split it up amongst colleges or something, done some small sats? I get it. I do get his point. You know, it's payload. There's a strong risk that Falcon Heavy might fail. But I don't know. I just felt my first reaction is we've got so much up there already that's debris. We add into it. But I don't know. I believe, and I think you read the press and it says it's going into Mars orbit. I believe, actually, it's going into a longer solar orbit.
Yeah, yeah.
So it literally is gone, and it's gone for good. And it's a bit like the old Saturn Vs, wasn't it? Originally, the Saturn Vs they started with, they planned the stages to continue to go into a solar orbit. And then they decided, no, let's aim them at the moon and use them to crash into the moon to measure, to use it for all sorts of other measurements. But apparently there's some Saturn V's in that orbit as well. So they'll
be found by aliens in about a million years' time. And they'll be like, well, where's the key? Where's the key for this thing? Why do we turn it on?
Should have been a DeLorean or something like that would have been there.
More appropriate. Second-hand Tesla, only launched one. It's got 3 billion miles on the clock.
One careful owner.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing the Falcon Heavy. And, of course, we were hoping this year as well to see the Boeing Starliner and the Dragon 2 as well, the manned capsules flying to the ISS. But that's looking less and less likely now from what I'm hearing.
I think they were racing to do it by sort of August time. That's sort of slipped now, both Boeing and SpaceX. At the moment, it looks as if Boeing might be slightly ahead in terms of October time frame. But, you know, these are manned missions, and you do not want to, you know, as much as we love us, everyone loves a space race. You don't want to kind of rush it just for the sort of sheer hell of it, you know.
True. Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's come back to aircraft then, and let's look at some developments on the military side. We've just seen the retirement of the Lynx, of course, the AH-9As. which was, I think, very sad again, but progress has to be made. But I suppose the thing we talk about, and we've talked about for the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, is F-35 and whether we're going to get to see it and what we're going to see and what development there's going to be. But this year, we are going to see them, aren't we? We're going to hopefully see them on the QE and the Queen Elizabeth.
Absolutely. And there's sort of lots of updates. You know, you have to try and keep up with them. I mean, just today, as we record, the Ministry of Defence has announced that the first two ab initio British pilots have flown the aircraft. So these are a Royal Air Force pilot and a Royal Navy pilot who have flown the aircraft straight out of training. So these are not pilots that have come from any other platform. And bizarrely, Peter, literally as we are recording, I've had an email to say that the first F-35B built outside of the United States, this is in Italy, has been completed final assembly and has been delivered to the Italian Navy today. But yeah, all eyes are going to be, from our point of view, are going to be on, you know, 617 Squadron, the aircraft carrier, and this sort of ever, you know, it's getting ever closer to seeing F-35s, you know, on our boat and over the UK. If you've seen any of the photos of people who've been to RAF Marham recently, there's an incredible amount of work going on there, building work, structural work, runway work to get the airfield ready for F-35, and it's going to be here sooner rather than later.
Looking forward to it. And what about F-35's appearances at air shows? Not heard anything this year, given the enormity of this year and the centenary that we're celebrating. Any what do we expect to see?
We're still in January, so it is early days. I'd be very surprised if our newest Royal Air Force strategic aircraft wasn't over in the UK for the centenary. Probably a good time to mention the RAF 100 events throughout this year, and including a Royal Review of aircraft, flypasts and all of these sorts of things. Surely, Tim, have you heard anything? Surely F-35 is going to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take it as read that they'd fly a couple of aircraft for Rio and for Farnborough. The aircraft's down for appearance as we record in a couple of weeks' time at Singapore Air Show.
Okay.
So, again, there's more stuff happening there. The Marines have been in Japan with the F-35B. And I think recently about to start the first operational ship deployment for the US Marines on board their assault ships.
Okay. Are you going to Singapore, Tim?
I am, yes.
Oh, okay. Tell us about it. When's that?
We have to
live our air show lives through you, you know. So,
early February, it's the biannual. So it comes around every couple of years as Singapore Air Show. So be interested to see what's going on there. Airbus has promised. Now, while we were talking about the Dubai Air Show, they didn't get the A380 deal. Mm. They've now got the A380 deal.
Yeah.
That was the last hurrah with Emirates, up to 36, I think it was, believe. That's a lifeline to the A380. And John Leahy, who is stepping down this year, a salesman, you know, legendary salesman, he was also promising a couple more, you know, so there's 2 or 3 wide body deals, in the pipeline. So could be interesting to see there as to. Again, whether he manages to pull a few final deals out and sort of seal them. Interestingly, you know, we air traffic growth is now above, I think, 7% above previously 5%. So this is why the airlines are doing going great guns. Demand is surging, you know, and people are still buying airplanes.
Yeah, true.
It's also, unless I'm very much mistaken, the 50th anniversary of the Republic of Singapore Air Force, I believe.
It is, yeah. So they'll be specially marked. They're going to have specially marked F-15s. There's going to be special sort of celebrations there. A joint joint sort of flying display with the F-15, F-16s, and all sorts of other sort of interesting stuff going on from that point of view. Yeah, so that'll be a good thing to look out for as well.
Listen, I haven't got long. It's about The Aviation Historian, the magazine the mainstream monthlies don't want you to know about. It's a new compact format quarterly journal, exploring the less well-known paths of flying history. It's created by experienced, award-winning former Aeroplane magazine editors Mick Oakey and Nick Stroud. It's not in the shops, but you can get it via the website, theaviationhistorian.com.
We know you're in there.
They're coming for me. I've got to go. Remember, The Aviation Historian.
In terms of some of the, you know, the big stories to come out, we've seen, of course, Airbus and Bombardier with the C-Series, which was a pretty decent coup, I've got to say. But the pressure is on Boeing to see what they're going to do. And of course, they're now gently falling into bed with Embraer as well. Do you think something could be announced in somewhere like Singapore or maybe even Farnborough in terms of anything more formal? We know that Boeing has an interest in selling F-18s down there, and of course they need a smaller airliner, so Embraer, that's their territory. Of course, well, we've got the military, what is it, the C, what's their twin-engined?
KC.
Yeah.
KC-390. Well, in some respects, so Airbus played a blinder. It surprised a lot of people, but they played a blinder in scooping up the C-Series. You know, this was something that they identified as, when they were working out what to do with the Neo, re-engineering the A320. They were actually quite keen to kill the strangler. At one point, somebody said sort of strangler C-Series at birth. Turns out now that they're best friends. So Boeing has reacted, and they've got reported to be in negotiations with Embraer Brazil. Now there's some tricky problems with that, in that partnership, or is it a full merger? Now if you're talking about a full merger, there's likely to be big obstacles in that, and that the government has a golden share.
Yeah,
they're not
right.
likely to want it to become Boeing Brazil. There's some good things there that could fit into Boeing's portfolio, like Super Tucano, that goes great guns, and the KC-390, which is a great military transport, which would nice sort of Hercules size transport that Boeing could market. There's also sort of flight controls, Boeing are quite interested in their sort of flight controls, fly-by-wire stuff, I believe. And, just the sort of sheer, I suppose, energy coming out of Brazil. But having said that, there's golden share. And also there's the margins that perhaps Brazil, profit margins isn't as high as Boeing, used to.
Yeah.
It's more sort of a nuanced thing. I mean, they already are work together, actually, Boeing and Embraer on Boeing's sort of civil airliner what do they call it, eco demonstrator. So one of those was one of Embraer's E-jets, E195, E90. I can't remember which one it was exactly, but that was to sort of jointly test eco-friendly airliner technologies together. So, again, the Bombardier, the C-Series thing with Airbus is everyone's sort of very excited about it, but there's nothing. It still has to be approved. It still has to be pass all the legal hurdles and what have you, and the so it's not sort of set in stone yet. And indeed, at Dubai, there wasn't any they kept well away from each other. Bombardier and Airbus were kept well away from each other in terms of it, even with the sort of like light-hearted sort of social media stuff that goes on. You know, there wasn't any sort of joint feed media opportunities. Well, we're, you know, welcome to the family C series or anything like that. So. Yeah. It's one to keep an eye on see how it develops.
Okay. Well, let's come back closer to home then. We were talking about air shows. Any expectations or ideas of what we might be going to or going to see? I'll be going to Air Day again this year, but I'm going differently this time. I'm taking my seven-year-old daughter for her first air show. So,
really
looking forward to it. And so is she.
And so it begins.
Yeah, I hope so. I've taken her to Compton Abbas enough times. But it's funny, I had this discussion with my wife when I came back last year, and she said, well, why don't you just take her? And of course I said, well, I've got my microphones and my headphones. And I thought, do you know what? It'd be really nice just to go to an air show without the recorder one time and just enjoy it and not have to work.
Or you could get her to do the interviews. And you could just sit there with a pint, and you could say, right, yeah, go on, you know, here's a list of questions. Go and interview that person.
Yeah, we could. So that
obviously that's modern child slavery. I'm not advocating about that at all. But
I will
work experience.
I'll take my recorder, but it'll be a slightly different set of interviews. I think we get this year. But yeah, looking forward to the air show season for different reasons. Really, Riyadh's shaping up quite nicely. I noticed the Canadian. F-18s coming over in a lovely new camouflage.
Oh, have you seen the scheme? It looks amazing.
Just so looks awesome.
60th anniversary of NORAD, and but I mean they do brilliant schemes every year, but you know, this is looking absolutely brilliant, and they're obviously coming over for Yeovilton as well as the air tattoo. Yeah. So I think it's Captain Stefan Porteous is this year's pilot, and he'll be welcomed over here. It's funny, when I was a youngster going to air shows, when the Canadian Hornets were based in Germany, we used to see the Canadian Hornet all the time, you know, at the likes of Milton Hall over here. But obviously it's a bit more of a rarity now, so that's fantastic. And as you just said, they've announced some fantastic support for Riyadh today as well, in terms of statics, Hercules, Aurora, Globemaster. So it's all coming together.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a classic year. Actually, I mean Riyadh and FOM are obviously, you know, but I think we've got this added excitement now of the RAF 100, and they're going to be there to encourage to really pull out the stops. You see what I mean, you know. So you know, obviously, there's operational pressures, and there's people are saying, "Well, you know, do I want to give up my weekend?" But how many times are you going to go to a centenary of the world's oldest independent air force? So, I mean, just looking on Facebook this week, you know, Norwegian Air Force historical squadron with a couple of de Havilland Vampires, you know, they've repainted one of their Vampires in 72 Squadron models. Yeah. How cool is that, eh? So I think we'll see a lot more of these other stuff that kind of pop up, or people having, you know, even people putting kind of life-size static models or something, and you put it in your town centre, and all of a sudden you walk around the corner and you're like, oh bloody hell, there's a Spitfire there. Where did that?
Yeah, there's actually
there's actually
a tour of aircraft, isn't there, going around to sort of major city centres, and kind of on that same vein, we've even got. For Cosford, for example, things like Black Mike, the jet black
Royal Air Force
Phantom has been shipped down to Cosford, has been put back together, and looks absolutely stunning. So they can try and get as many aircraft as they can from that 100 years on display, and also on a slight tangent. Sorry, some people might have read this on. Gar's Facebook page. There's also some TV programming. The BBC have announced some programming, including a 90-minute program with Ewan McGregor and his brother, who some people know was an RAF officer, and they are going to be flying in a whole selection of iconic Royal Air Force aircraft. And I know that Paul Godfrey, who was station commander up at Lofsey, I think, flew one of them in Typhoon. And I would expect to see sort of BVMF and stuff like that on there as well. So I agree wholeheartedly with Tim, with everything surrounding RAF 100. It's going to be a great year, I think.
And is there any plans to have anything formal over London, any flypasts or anything like that, do you know, Gareth?
Yeah, there are a whole selection of events. There's actually an RAF dedicated RAF 100 website, and that will tell you all the city centres where this sort of tour of aircraft are going throughout the year. There's open cockpit events. There will be a flypast over London, I believe. I'm not wrong, Tim, am I? There is a...
I think that's on the plan. Yeah, there's also a concert. I think a concert and sort of various gala. There's a whole load of stuff planned, and it's also 75 years of Dan Busters.
Absolutely.
In April,
I hear from Joseph Chung, who did our he was talking on the Facebook page about the work being done at the RAF Museum as well. And I believe that's gone through some refurbishment and is due to reopen very soon.
Yeah, it's been, I guess this whole centenary has been a big focal point in lots of ways, which are very positive, not just for this year, but obviously there'll be benefits from this year moving forward in terms of preservation of aircraft and what's displayed and everything. So, loads to see and loads to do. I mean, literally, if you go to Google and put RAF 100 in, it'll take you straight to the MOD page and people can have a look. There's actually a map on there, so you can see very readily what's happening and where.
And I also think it's important to note that you mentioned your daughter, Peter, that the RAF and the MOD are very keen that it's not just about historical celebrations or marking, you know, the Battle of Britain or Dan Busters or etc. They're very keen to use it as a STEM outreach program as well, and they're really sort of targeting young people in terms of a bit like kind of ESA did with Tim Peake, and this is a great way to reach people and tell people about, you know, flight, engineering, science, maths, and all the rest of it.
Just talking about Tim Peake, is there any plan for him to return to the ISS? I know other space agencies quite often, particularly in Europe, are rotating their astronauts back. I've not heard anything from him recently. Is he back in the astronaut corps?
Yeah, I mean, he's and I've interviewed him last year, and I would have to go back and check his job title.
I thought he was going back.
His schedule is such that he expects to fly again to the ISS. Yeah,
right. Does Brexit affect that at all?
No. He's well. I mean. ESA isn't an EU organisation.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Finally, he's currently head of astronaut team.
Yeah. The UK astronaut team or the European astronaut team?
No, European astronaut team. So he's based in Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. So he thinks there'll be a chance for a second mission to the space station about 2024, but he's not sure exactly, you know, when that would be. One point he does make, though, is that the SpaceX coming in and Boeing with a commercial crew, that will allow much more flight opportunities.
Yeah, because Dragon is, I think they're both four-seaters, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's an idea that you can now have, you can offer it to, I mean, one thing would be obviously space tourists like Dennis Tito, but it could be sovereign astronauts. Or so, for example, we just talked earlier about the United Arab Emirates opening up an astronaut corps. I would be not unsurprised if, you know, that they went to SpaceX or they went to Boeing and say, can you fly one of our guys to the or girls to the International Space Station, do some science. Great project.
G'day, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
I saw an announcement, I think it was this morning, it was yesterday, that that Mr. Trump wants to end funding to the ISS by 2025. So I think that's going to be it, isn't it? Because there was talk of it going up to 2028, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, this was what the previous administrator was trying to push for, trying to push international partners for, is to a commitment to keep it going. Now, US is trying to focus on the moon and push further out of low Earth orbit. So they want to leave low Earth orbit to commercial exploitation.
Right.
So, okay, you're going to get Boeing and SpaceX taking stuff to the International Space Station. So the question then becomes is, could the other partners take up the slack if the US pulled out? Could you get new partners in? Is it going to be, you know, is it, would the US sort of be, I don't know, part of the station, perhaps be divided by commercial entities? Who knows? You know, that if they go down that, I mean, I think they'll be hoping that this isn't sort of set in stone, and perhaps there's a little bit of leeway to extend it. You know, it has to come down at some point, but you know, just now when it's got the, you've got the maximum crew on there, and you've got two new vehicles coming to it. You know, make the most of it while it's there.
Okay, well, let's crack on with some other things that have come up. One story that's been taxing me, predominantly because there's a link in my professional life to it, is the never-ending saga of Heathrow and the third runway. And the discussions now are about how they can reduce the cost of the overall project. So they're going through an exercise of cost-saving initiatives, and we're back to a shorter third runway, or even talk of potentially extending the existing northern runway and splitting it in two again, which I thought had been kicked out, but they've not died. They've not gone to bed, that team.
Heathrow, it'll run and run. It's
probably why BA sense, wants more A380s, yeah, because the reality is it's just not going anywhere.
In a sense, it's been a sort of a victim of Brexit and other things. You know, people have sort of taken their eye off the ball and that. And perhaps if there'd been more speed in decision making, you might have actually sort of seen some, you know, I don't know, dare I say it, people with the bulldozers out and people doing actual work. Instead, we're kind of backtracking, and there's people sort of thinking of other ideas of how to you know, kind of make it cheaper. You know, how can you get the costs down? They've had some resistance, I know, from you know, British Airways. They've complained that that it's cost too much. Splitting the northern runway into two and having the same runway, but aircraft landing and same off on the same same longer runway as if you'd like. That's something that Concorde pilot Jock Lowe is Captain Jock Lowe, right, is very sort of backing and thinks could be a way. And interestingly, there was something actually over in the past week as well a while back, one of the options that was being mooted was to link Heathrow and Gatwick sort of virtual terminals into one super hub. And everyone says, you're going to be 2 hours on the train by the time that the train has kind of chugged its way along. But then Hyperloop has come along.
Yeah.
So Elon Musk, and now people are, there's some people who are seriously, you know, sort of suggesting, you know, semi-seriously perhaps, well, you know, if you put a hyperloop on there and it goes at what, 600 miles an hour, 700 miles an hour, in a, you know, this tube in a vacuum, that's half an hour, 20 minutes or something. I can't see that getting approved, but
the other thing that's
somebody definitely will do a presentation to it, and it will confuse the issue even more. Because then I'm like, well, perhaps we should.
Gatwick apparently have started using their, well, it's the main taxiway, but they use it as a backup runway because of some works going on the main runway. And of course, it's again opened up the discussion for Gatwick as well, because I believe that there is a agreement in place that comes to an end very soon, which lifts the restriction of them using single runway operations. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gatwick surfaces as well to add to the debate of runways in the southeast of England, which just doesn't seem to go away. But there we go. That will go on forever. Guys, I'm conscious of time and the fact that night shifts and other things are approaching. Just want to ask Gareth, really, we've asked him about some things he's up to. Gareth, how's Global Aviation Resource plans for this year?
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet. I mean, people will realise we don't publish as much as we used to, and that's purely just a function of time, as much as anything. But the guys, we've all been chatting away, and we've got some guest pieces coming from some really interesting locations in the next few weeks. We've got guys who are going to be covering the first red flag of this year, and we're all very excited about the air show season and RAF 100. So that, yeah, there'll be plenty more to come. The social media is still busy, but it's a horrendous cliche, but it's kind of quality over quantity for us these days. But yeah, there'll be some nice content for people to look at, I'm sure.
Good. And for those who don't visit it or haven't used it, we also are involved in the Aerospace and Aviation podcast group on Facebook. So if you like what we do and like some of the other aviation podcasts out there, we sit behind that and help to promote other aviation and aerospace podcasts. And there's some really, really great ones coming out at the moment. There's some new ones. I know we've picked up some interest in some of those, but it's a great place to go if you like aviation and aerospace stuff. So keep an eye out on that. It is a private group, so you do have to apply to join, and that's just because we've had our fingers burnt with people coming on there using it to advertise their services. But well worth doing, and I'm involved in doing that. Also for me, I'm working with Max and the team and the Airplane Geeks occasionally, do a little bit for them as well. So if you don't listen to the Airplane Geeks, do come on over and give them a listen. Just want to wrap up with books. We always talk about great books, and we all seem to have a very different style and have some really interesting stuff. What books has everyone got on their pile, and what are they looking forward to this year?
Tim, you got anything?
Yeah, go on then.
Tim's right, so always I've got something very, all right, very so interesting.
I've just finished a book called Stealth Fighter, A Year in the Life of an
F-1. Oh, my God! I'm reading that at the moment.
Yes.
That's you. No, let me go first. It's extraordinary, because I don't know about you two, this book's been around for a while, but I kind of only just got around
to
buying it, and it's absolutely brilliant.
No, fantastic stuff. Where are you up to? Spoilers, a war happens.
Yeah, well, I am.
Somewhere in the Balkans.
Probably getting towards the end of that campaign, I would think.
Yes, isn't it a fascinating book?
It really is. Yeah.
What's he called? What's he called?
Stealth Fighter.
Stealth Fighter.
Okay. So this chap is a former F-111
He's a EF-111 pilot.
Sorry, EF-111. So a Raven pilot, transforced to the stealth fighter. So he goes on how to learning to fly it, all the security that goes with it, training. And then they go to the war in the Balkans, and it's an eye-opening account of a modern air war that somehow succeeded despite itself in a way.
There are some extraordinary bits in there, Tim, aren't there? Not just about the flying, but about the sort of the planning. And they had so much hardware out there. I'm sort of no big spoilers, but people will see this when they read it. But they would have a number of sorties planned for a night, and the vast majority of them would be scrapped because there were no targets left. You know, because all the targets had been taken, out. Or, you know, there's just a lot of stuff of that ilk, which I found very interesting. I find it very interesting.
And the commanding and the stuff. I mean, you know, the time, sort of Wesley Clark, you know, General Wesley Clark, NATO commander, you know, came in for a lot of stick. And reading this book, you can see why, because some of the airmen were kind of tearing their hairs out over some of the sort of decisions of you know, you've got these stealth fighters here, but they weren't allowed to attack their target. It had to be a gradual thing, and it was kind of training with live weapons. You know, out and I know the other thing also is. And the interesting thing, this is it's just the last era before JDAM and GPS came in. Yeah. And you see from there, you reread from this, is that is why they came in with JDAM, and JDAM was this, oh yes, at last we can give someone a GPS sort of thing on the ground, and we can bomb it through the clouds. Whereas, you know, a lot of the drops were, there's clouds in the way.
Weather,
you got a laser, you can't drop, go back home.
Well, so that is bizarre.
Two birds with one stone there.
Anything else interesting going around? I'm reading a book by Mike Brook. I don't know if Gareth might know of him. More Testing Times, Test Flying in the 80s and 90s. Good.
I haven't read that one, but I do know. I know that one.
Really, really good book. Do you know what? It's written really well, so it's lovely and easy to digest. But the breadth of aircraft he gets to fly, because he makes it his job, even though he's the station commander at Farnborough and Boscombe, he makes it his job to try and see if he can fly everything that's around. So he flies everything from, I don't know, a BAC-111 to a Vickers Varsity and everything in between. It is a great read. So I'd recommend that. And what about books on the pile or books you want to buy? I will say, Tim, I've still got the one that you talked about a couple of shows back on the SAS in the guys who get dropped in South America. What was that?
Kisses from Nimbus. Nimbus.
That's
a very interesting read. SAS pilot stroke MI6 pilot. That's a really good read. Upcoming stuff. I'd be interested. Apparently, John Leahy, who is the outgoing Airbus sales chief, he's reported to be working on a book.
That'll be interesting. I bet that'll be a political blockbuster.
I think the last thing I read was he's got to live it. Leave it a little bit of time for some people to retire.
Oh dear! Right.
Before he kind of dishes the dirt, you know, as it were. So that would should be an interesting one to read. Yeah,
I got Elon Musk's biography to read as well. He fascinates me, that guy. So I'm quite keen to read that. I read the SpaceX story as well. Towards the end of last year, which was really interesting, and they were so close to going out of business, so close that, and they relied on one NASA order that eventually saved them, but they almost went out.
Amazing.
anyway, so that's books. Anything else on the agenda before we sign off? I know it's been a bit of a session where we've darted from story to story, but just thought it'd be good to catch up.
Yeah, well, I just put in a little plug, actually. If we were talking about stealth and we were talking about links earlier. Yep. We were talking about links, were you? Sorry. Yep. So stealth and links, watch out for the March issue, hopefully the March issue, it may be forthcoming, on an article on a UK stealth helicopter.
I saw project, you tweeted about this.
Project from the 1980s.
Yeah, saw that, yeah.
So this is from one of our fellows who was a chief engineer on the Apache and Merlin Mark III. And he found some very interesting designs from the now Leonardo UK, but were former Westland Archives, that the company was proposing a low observable attack helicopter, attack gunship for the British Army in about sort of 85-87 time frame. So incredible stuff. It's got a faceted fuselage, it's got burt blades, it's got internal weapons bays, all designed to make it low observable. And it's one of sort of several concepts they went through. There's several sort of configurations they were looking at, and fascinating story. I didn't know anything about it. I'd sort of seen him. He was down to do a lecture, and asked him. I said, "Oh, stealth helicopters. He was talking about Comanche," and he went, "No, UK one." And my jaw just dropped.
Yeah, right.
Because obviously
okay.
this is a decade before, the US Comanche. So that is, it's fascinating bit of aviation history. And you just think, well, what are they working on now? Yeah. What might still be going on in some sort of shed somewhere in Darkest Yeovil? So great story.
Nothing wrong with Darkest Yeovil. Anything else, Gareth, before we close up?
No, I'm done. That's the extent of my aviation so far this year. But looking forward to hopefully catching up a bit more often, and going to be loads to talk about.
Yeah, we got some great interviews lined up, some great guests to bring onto the show, and some great topics as well. And thanks to everyone who is out there sending us ideas for new features. The Falklands feature was a bit of a test for us. It proved slightly overwhelming, so I'm not sure we'll do anything like that this year, but we'll try our best to follow up on some of the suggestions you've made. So, okay, that's it. We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. And if you feel able, please leave us some feedback on iTunes or your podcast playing app. Like our Facebook page, come over and visit us on Facebook or Twitter, and you do get the opportunity to score us and leave feedback on our Facebook page as well, so please do that if you can. You can find Extended now on all popular podcast players and, of course, on iTunes. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license. So, Tim, where can we find you online?
Okay, I'm tweeting at RESTimR, and you can find the Royal Aeronautical Society at www.aerosociety.com.
And Gareth, where can we find you?
Yeah, Twitter is Gareth_Stringer and globalaviationresource.com.
And by the way, that was a stunning win for Arsenal the other day. There's some great some great goals.
Yeah, get in.
You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and lurking around on our Facebook page, of course. You can also find me on the Aviation and Aerospace podcast group on Facebook. With that and the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Tim.
Goodbye. See you next time.
And it's goodbye from Gareth.
See you, folks.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
Event Fire Solutions is an independent fire and rescue service providing both preventative and reactive emergency services across the UK. As well as our main event management, we provide the support and equipment to deliver a safe and risk-free event. From fire appliances to medical vehicles, our fully trained and accredited staff will make your event a true success. If you need risk-related advice, investigation, medical or fire training, then we can deliver this for you. From the office to the airfield, we have the experience and the accreditation and most of all the skills to make your workplace event safe and risk-free. To find out more of how we can help you, look us up at eventfiresolutions.co.uk.
This is XTP Media.